Good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Welcome aboard after what I hope was a restful weekend for you all. Thankful to have the opportunity, as always, to start off the week with you, talking about the issues, the politics, the news of the day, of the weekend, and shaping the week ahead. We get started now on Monday with our new-ish, I probably have two more weeks to be able to say new-ish news hour, where we talk to those who are in the news, writing about the news, watching the news, about the big stories of the day. That's our conversation this morning. 790-2040 is your Liveline opportunity to join that conversation. We're going to kick off the show here with the Arizona Daily Star's Metro columnist Tim Steller. There is a big week ahead locally. We're going to start locally, both with the Tucson City Council and the Pima County Board of Supervisors. The City Council this week will be discussing water rates in their council meeting tomorrow, reviewing a Move Tucson list of transportation projects that Tucsonans say they want. And then on Thursday, what I'm calling a come to Jesus moment for the Tucson City Council and the Board of Supervisors. They'll meet about the PAYGO transportation program. They'll talk about water rates. They'll, of course, talk about collaboration. But I think overall, we're starting to see a little bit of a souring of relationship between the city and the county. It looked promising during COVID. But there's a few things in everybody's crawl. They'll talk about it hopefully on Thursday and hopefully feel better afterwards. So that is what's happening this week. In the midst of all that, Tim Steller has written articles in the last couple weeks on both differential water rates for unincorporated county residents and the Regional Transportation Authority. We talk with him now for a few moments. Tim, thanks for being with us on this Monday. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Zach. How are you?
Doing good. So I want to start with water. This was a piece that that you wrote within the last week, a week and a half. The City Council today, Tim, will be reviewing 8 different proposals for differential water rates. The Citizens Water Advisory Committee sent a memo within the last few days to the Tucson City Council proposing a delay until fall of 2021 for further consideration, basically saying they're as confused as you are on what the purpose is of these rates and who it's going to serve, feeling like all along this was about annexation, but they're not seeing it helping with annexation or incorporation. Give us kind of your thoughts that you shared in that article, and you actually had some beef with this topic, and you got a lot of heat for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not sure why, but for some reason, this has become a real big cause in the city, especially among the more progressive elements of the faction of city voters and activists. And, you know, my point of view has been that, and this is what also what the CWAC wrote in their letter, that there is, I should say CWAC is a Citizens Water Advisory Committee. That's the group you referenced. It's kind of a backwards, they've gone about this, in my opinion, in a backwards way. They've proposed differential rates for county customers and without giving a reason or a specific reason, specifying one reason or two reasons or whatever first, and then kind of saying, well, we can do these rates, and this is what we might do with the money, and these are the reasons we might do it. So, you know, my long story short point of view is, hey, if you want to raise the rates or establish differential rates, say why. Establish 1, 2, 3 specific reasons. Do a study of those reasons and what differential rate that would justify, rather than proposing certain rate increases and then kind of figuring out and shifting the reasons afterward and then deciding beyond that where the money will go. So that's my broad point of view. Oh, and by the way, Zach, I think you said today that the city will be hearing this today, but it's tomorrow, of course.
It is tomorrow, yes. Thank you. Yeah. Tomorrow was what was in my head. Sometimes sometimes what comes out is a little bit different. I try to make sure that those are the two same things 99% of the time, but it happens. You know, it was interesting in that CWAC memo to the mayor and council that just came out recently. They addressed something that I started talking about on the show last week after it was kind of brought to my attention, and no one's really talking about it that I can tell. And that is that as of 2012's numbers, I'm still waiting to get updated census numbers, Tim, but about 45% of unincorporated county residents make less than $50,000 a year. I think the narrative has been that, you know, well, there's wealthier unincorporated, and there are, but that's not monolithic. And so there is somewhat of a redistribution tone to some of the reasoning of why to do this, but we don't talk about the fact that Pima County has somewhat similar poverty rates and lower middle class rates as Tucson, and the CWAC is asking, is this fair to them? Is that a valid concern by the CWAC? Do you share that, Tim, in your article or otherwise?
I don't think I talked about that in my article, but yeah, I do share that. I mean, I think one thing a lot of people have pointed out is that there are a lot of people on fixed incomes who maybe moved into new houses 40, 50 years ago in the foothills or other unincorporated areas. And, you know, it is a burden on them, although depending on how big the rate increase is, it could be a small or a large burden. But yeah, I think the idea behind it, or the kind of animating factor, is the idea that we're going to be able to, you know, essentially soak the rich. You know, the wealthy people can afford it, and therefore we should charge them more and just redistribute that to the poor through assistance programs, canceling debt, that sort of thing. In general, I'm actually not opposed to that kind of policy, especially when it comes to taxation. I've written about the flat tax, you know, recently, and opposing that idea. I believe in progressive taxation, but I see it differently in this case, and because of it being water, which is, of course, you know, essential to life, and because there's no alternative. You can't, you know, at times people have said, I think somewhat flippantly, well, then they should dig a well. First of all, digging a well is a very costly idea. And secondarily, the law, the state law surrounding digging a well when you're in a area served by a municipal water service is actually pretty tricky. You have to justify it various ways, and you have to get the approval of the water service that serves the area. So really, there isn't an option for these people. And there certainly are many who are wealthy or, you know, well-to-do, but then, yeah, there's this whole other group that isn't, you know, that is on a fixed income or just isn't, you know, it's like a typical Tucson family.
Tim Steller, Arizona Daily Star's Metro columnist, is our featured reporter for this news hour. Before we go to a break, and then we'll switch topics, Tim. You talked to Tim Tomier at the city. Another of a concern, I want to clarify kind of your position on this, is, you know, Councilmember Cunningham in particular has talked about legal fees, torts, service fees, that it costs more to send water to unincorporated. Does that hold up in your mind? Are you seeing those costs of service being different for those outside the city of Tucson?
Well, those are kind of two different things. You know, there's the cost of service, that, you know, pumping the water to these people. And then there's the question of toward the fact that the city is liable for whatever happens all over the network, including outside the city boundaries. And so therefore, you know, if the city ends up paying a big, you know, settlement or something related to water, it's city taxpayers who cover that, not Tucson Water customers. So therefore, people in the unincorporated area escape that responsibility. Well, I mean, all of that could be true, might be true, whatever, but there's no, nobody has studied it. Nobody has established that that is true and that this is the burden that it places on the city. You know, basically they need, as far as I'm concerned, to come to specifics, do, you know, hire an outside firm, establish what the real cost is to the city, and then if there is one beyond what the city customers pay for serving people in the unincorporated area, then pass that. But they're just kind of, guesstimating what the extra cost is.
We'll be back with Tim Steller after a short break. We'll change topics. We'll talk about regional transportation, the Pima Association of Government, something that was actually referenced in the water piece that Tim Steller wrote, but discussed more fully in an opinion piece before that. Again, Tim Steller is the Arizona Daily Star's Metro columnist. We'll be right back after a short break here on Tipping Point.
With real people. Tipping Point with Zach Ensor. 1030 The Voice.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is bringing back two special galleries, the Indigenous Arts Gallery and the Schmidt Gallery of Latin American Folk Art. See contemporary artworks brought to you by a committee of Indigenous community curators, exploring 21st century Indigenous peoples, cultural sovereignty, and practices. Examine how traditions from many regions of the Americas evolve and take on new meanings in a changing world. See both Thursday to Sunday weekly, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Reserve your ticket today at TucsonMuseumOfArt.org.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens Football Facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and Southern Arizona, here in the 1030 The Voice studios. Our Monday morning news hour today is with Tim Steller, the Metro columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. He's written a couple of opinions on two major issues that are being discussed by the Tucson City Council and Pima County this week, of course, around water and transportation. Tim, I want to jump right in and talk about your piece on the Pima Association of Governments and RTA. I feel like in many ways what was missing in that piece, what's been missing in the community conversation, what's been missing, and I feel like water, there's just a lot of things thrown in the pot, and it's becoming so fuzzy. I don't know what the beef is anymore. But from the original RTA plan, 61% of original project funding occurred and went to the city of Tucson. 29% of the RTA went to transit. I'm sure the majority of that is in Tucson. 90% or the rest of the way of the funding is now going to city of Tucson projects, which, while it is at the end of the RTA, was actually pushed, my understanding is, to the end by former mayor and councils of the city of Tucson. I don't hear any of those four things talked about really out in the papers, out in the news, out in the city and mayor and council positions. What do you think about that? What's the beef here that you see?
So I'm not aware of that, the city asking to be put at the end. I don't know about that. If that's true, that was kind of stupid on their part, because it's obvious that the things, you know, based on the fact that there was no inflation built into the project costs, it was foreseeable that the projects at the end of the 20-year RTA would run short of money, which is what's happening, and projects like Grant Road or what have you would suffer as a result or get delayed. And that's what's happening. So I don't know if that's the case. That was really dumb on their part.
Like I mentioned, it feels like a lot of different things are being thrown. And by the way, like, I'm not one side on this. There's a lot of issues here involved with this. But what is the beef? What is the concern of the city? And do you think the city's going to pull out and do their own thing?
They're certainly trying to use their leverage. And I think you mentioned, by the way, three things before the break. Water, of course, that we just discussed. RTA, which we're discussing now, and the PAYGO road plan that the county has going on. And I think what you see in all three of those cases is that the city has long felt that it is being run over, roughshod by the county in various regional efforts, and they are trying to kind of address that. Now, you know, it's debatable in each case whether that's true or how much that's true, but that's the broad context here. And of course, Chuck Huckleberry is the county administrator still, and he's the guy who they point to as kind of rigging the system against them. But anyway, going back to RTA and PAG, let me see. I forgot what your specific question was.
Yeah, if you had to look through all the different talking points out there on sides, what's the beef?
Yeah, the beef is that the city feels it's getting short shrift in a couple of ways. One is that what we discussed already, that the in-city projects are, you know, backloaded to the end of the first 20-year RTA and therefore in danger of not being completed because they're not fully funded. Specifically, you know, the way it was set up is that the RTA has a 9-member council from all the area municipalities, the county, and the area tribes, as well as the Arizona Department of Transportation, and everyone has the same one vote. So, you know, Sal Rita, Oro Valley, and Marana have an equal, each of them has an equal vote to what the city of Tucson has on the board. And so what Tucson, Mayor Romero and others are saying is that's unfair because that gives these little jurisdictions way more power than disproportionate power. You know, the city makes up more than half the metro area population, and yet we have only one vote out of 9 in the city. So they've asked for weighted voting, meaning that they get opportunity to have a vote that's proportional to their size, their population, and the smaller jurisdictions led by the mayor of Marana and others have said, no way, you know, that's not the way we cannot live with that. So the way the city views it, and I share this view to a large extent, is that the smaller jurisdictions have kind of dominated the RTA, I'm sorry, well, PAG and the RTA through this disproportionate voting power. And also, this is an additional part of it, therefore been able to pursue their priorities, which have been traditional road projects, you know, road widenings, road buildings, as opposed to all the other kinds of transportation projects you could do. You know, sidewalks is a big thing that I'm into, for example. Transit, all the other alternatives. And so, let me just add one more thing here, which is, generally speaking, dealing with climate. We, of course, are in an area that's very vulnerable to rising temperatures and drying climate. And the city and others have pointed out that the RTA has been very, not very responsive to those concerns, very much like kind of minimizing the efforts that have been made at on the environment and climate and maximizing road building, traditional non-climate responsive projects. So if I were to summarize, that would about be the main thing that I would say.
You know, it's interesting, Tim, when I talk to the fellow members of the Pima Association of Governments, whether it's county or state, you know, they're saying, hey, we sense from the Community Advisory Council that there's the CAC of the RTA, that there's interest in addressing some of these issues, but they've been waiting for a year for the city of Tucson's Move Tucson priorities. And that they sense an openness once the city gets their projects in. The city of Tucson is going to tomorrow, emphasis on tomorrow, Tim, is going to get a report on the Department of Transportation and Mobility's priorities for Move Tucson that they collected from City of Tucson residents. So that's a piece as well. Tim, do you have even 5 minutes on the other side of the break? I wanted to ask you your thoughts as you look ahead to the city and council or the county and city co-meeting on Thursday. Do you have a couple moments on the other side just to address that?
I can take a few minutes. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Not a full segment, but would love your thoughts. The Metro reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, Tim Steller. A few more minutes on the other side. A busy week for the city of Tucson and Pima County. And then you and I will finish the rest of the way with a couple of things as we come out of the weekend and get ready for the week ahead with our Monday News Hour here on Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. We will return in just a moment here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 1030, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is bringing back two special galleries, the Indigenous Arts Gallery and the Schmidt Gallery of Latin American Folk Art. See contemporary artworks brought to you by a committee of Indigenous community curators, exploring 21st century Indigenous peoples, cultural sovereignty, and practices. Examine how traditions from many regions of the Americas evolve and take on new meanings in a changing world. See both Thursday to Sunday weekly, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Reserve your tickets today at TucsonMuseumOfArt.org.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Good morning again, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. We're back here in the 1030 The Voice studios for this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, wrapping up our news hour with a few more minutes with Tim Steller, the Arizona Daily Star's Metro reporter. We've talked about water and rates. We've talked about the Regional Transportation Authority. Real quick, Tim, here to wrap up. The city and the county are having a meeting this Thursday at noon, I believe, to talk about a couple of items that have really been kind of stuck in each other's craw. You know, last year we saw the city and county hold a joint meeting in response to COVID. Certainly some of the new folks in the seats on both the council and the Board of Supervisors are politically friendly, and I think there was this sense that maybe there would be a time of greater collaboration. Now it kind of seems to me we might be heading down a road where it gets feisty again. It certainly has been in the past. What are you forecasting from this meeting on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of issues and conflicts. As you point out, two of the five supervisors have been sympathetic to city positions,
right?
Adelita Grijalva and Matt Hines. But, I don't know if that's enough to kind of bridge the gap between, you know, say Rex Scott, who represents a lot of the people in the unincorporated county, and of course, Huckleberry and the administration with the city. I mean, they got, as you mentioned, the PAYGO issue, which is about road repair money. And the way the city's point of view is that we city taxpayers are subsidizing road building in the unincorporated county that we shouldn't be subsidizing because none of our money goes to us. There's a couple different ways of looking at that, but, those three issues, the RTA and PAG, water and PAYGO, are going to be, I don't know how they're going to resolve their differences over them.
Right. Do you worry? You've been reporting on this region for a long time, Tim. Do you have any cause for concern? We're certainly seeing, I think, a little bit of a less regional approach from some municipalities, I would say. And then this, testiness between the city and the county. Is this going down a road that should be concerning for residents here in Greater Tucson?
I mean, yes, but I think everyone kind of looks out for their own interests, and hopefully they will, actually come to some kind of compromise or solution. I mean, it's not unusual that people look out for their own interests. You can see that everywhere, and hopefully there's common ground they can come to. It's not going to happen, at least not anytime soon. But, all these conflicts do raise the kind of tempting thought of regional government that, it just doesn't make sense for us to be fighting over these issues about between nearby jurisdictions over and over and over again. But anyway, I mean, we, as it stands today, we got all these conflicting interests. And I just hope that they are able to come to some compromise on these and other issues.
Tim Stellar, we'll let you go. We kept you over a few more minutes. I appreciate kind of your thoughts on that. You just released an article in The Star yesterday. Do you have your next one already queued up? What's on your mind for the next one?
Not for the next one. I've got a lot of different options. I've been working for a while along, and a reporter at the paper has also been working on a separate article related to the county attorney's office, and that will be coming out before too long, but that's probably not the next one.
Got it. Tim Stellar, Arizona Daily Star, I appreciate you spending some time with us on a Monday. Thank you. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Tim. That's our Monday morning news hour, where we catch up with a variety of reporters and people in the media, people watching the news, and get their take. We've had Arizona Republic reporters. We've had, Louis does a Twitter feed. We really kind of try to mix it up and spend Mondays talking to people watching the news like we are. 790-2040. You can give us a call the rest of the way here as we now shift over to me talking about some of the news and issues that's on my mind. It was interesting, and we'll talk about this for a minute and go to another break. Been really watching what is going on with workers and why do so many people have such a hard time finding individuals who want to work in the sectors that they're being looked for. And it was interesting to see a couple of pieces specifically in the Washington Post over the weekend that actually contradict each other a little bit. And so I kind of wanted to try and look through a little bit of the murkiness and make sense. But the U.S. economy, we just got these numbers recently, added 559,000 jobs on net in May. Again, as the Washington Post reports, an acceleration from the previous month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported Friday. More than half of the jobs added were in leisure and hospitality, an industry hit especially hard by the pandemic. But that industry and the economy overall remains deeply in the hole. Across the economy, there were about 5% fewer jobs in May than existed in February 2020, the last month before the pandemic began. In leisure and hospitality, the jobs deficit is 15%. Not long ago, economists were predicting job growth of closer to 1 million positions per month, given the rapid reopening of pandemic-affected businesses around the country. Even more concerning, the U.S. labor force shrank a little in May. The Bureau of Labor Statistics show there are still about 3.5 million fewer people in the labor force than there were before the pandemic hit. This adds fuel to the argument that there are a lot of people sitting on the sidelines, either unready or unwilling to return back to work. It's kind of interesting. I think that there is an aspect to this of unemployment benefits at both the state and the federal level combined actually make more sense for a lot of individuals to stay home. The Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco estimates that in each month in early 2021, about 7 out of 28 unemployed individuals receive job offers that they would normally accept, but one of the 7 decides to decline the offer due to the availability of the extra $300 per week in payments. The benefits do appear to have a small but noticeable effect on job acceptance trends. Now, what was interesting is there were two articles that I looked at in the Washington Post, one of which said the absence of high-quality child care for individuals able to leave their homes literally to go back into the job market is a big deal. Other research says it doesn't have a noticeable effect. And so it's interesting once you start looking, even in same news publications, looking at different articles and different opinions, they start to contradict. So not only do you have to read different news platforms from different political viewpoints, you have to read multiple news takes within the same news publication. We try to do some of that hard work for you, but we can't do it all. So I would advise you to to do your own research. But it gets kind of hairy. It gets kind of interesting. Others talk about the fact that low wage service sector jobs were never exactly pleasant to begin with. This article in the Washington Post, and then also there are those who are genuinely fearful of getting into the market. What's interesting, I wanted to remark on two trends, is that what we are seeing, I think, is certainly, and I talked to some of my family who runs businesses, and they, whereas they may have put out a job a job request. They might have gotten 60 applications in. They're only getting two or three. They tell me I'm having to hire people that I would have never hired otherwise because I don't have as much of a choice. And now what's interesting is that, and I think many progressives, if they were being honest, and many are being honest, would say there's some kind of machinery in the background that's hoping that this does and has raised wages within certain companies. And many of those on the left would say, well, look, the solution is to raise your wages. And for those companies who have raised wages, both locally and franchise and corporate, they have seen individuals come back in. My concern always has been that a lot of small businesses can't afford to do that. It's not an issue of will or desire. It is an issue of capacity. And then what we see become interesting is that as worker shortages around the country happen, then the goods that they produce become more expensive by the time they get to some of these small businesses. And then those small businesses now have a choice to make. I have to raise my prices. Does that disallow me from raising my wages? Do I pass that on to the customer? And I think in a very real way, you start to see this paired inflation as wages go up. Costs of goods go up. It's given back to the consumer at a higher rate, and then it just becomes more expensive for everybody to be purchasing goods. And so that's the piece that I think isn't being talked about. You know, there was a news item on the TV news, which I rarely watch just because I don't. But at 10 o'clock last night, talking about how the price of meat has increased in part because, You know, Brnovich is asking for an investigation into whether the four main meat producers are manipulating the market. We know that they do. But there is a meat shortage that gets passed on to the customer because there's not enough workers who are working in the meat industry. This is kind of starting to kind of circle around a little bit. And I think just kind of in the end, it's flippant. Even if it's not said flippantly, it's flippant to say, well, you know, we'll just have businesses raise their wages. I talked to a restaurant owner who could, and he's experiencing full employment at his business. He goes, I want to pay my wait staff and my managers. I want to pay them, you know, higher than minimum wage. We're actually at full capacity. And if you are a business and that's a decision that makes sense for you, by all means, invest in your employees. I think everybody on the right and the left is in favor of investing in employees. But I've also been a part of a small business where we spent most of our money on our workers and just in some hard times in the last few years didn't have the investment to be able to invest anymore. We wanted to. We were able to comply with the minimum wage that was set in Arizona. But physically, just whether it was cost of goods, whether it was trying to keep the prices of our services low to our customers, it was just very, very difficult. And so every small business is a little bit different. But I think as we see this worker shortage start to come into play, it's actually making the cost of goods higher, which is making it harder for small businesses to do business, which is making it harder for consumers to pay for those services. And I think unemployment benefits have a huge part to do with it. It's just not the only part. And I think we have to be, we can't be disingenuous about the conversation. There's a lot of factors in play here. One business owner that I talked to, and we'll go to a break, said, what I'm concerned about is we have a number of people who are sitting out the labor market and they are getting paid to do so. They could come back if they wanted to, but they're not. My concern is that when those benefits end in September, now we have folks kind of hooked on the system, and it's going to be a massive transition to get those folks to jump back into the labor market. And this is a guy who I assume his politics are center left. You know, he's paying higher wages to his employees. I would not call him a conservative per se, but he's saying, I'm kind of worried what happens in September when we have to ask our labor market to come back in, and many have gotten used to not being in. And I'll just end by saying, I've talked to a lot of business owners who are struggling to find talent, are struggling to find workers, and it's affecting their business and it's affecting their customers. So just wanted to kind of report a little bit on that. When we come back, we'll wrap up our news hour here. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. This hour of Tipping Point, give us a call, 790-2040. We'll be here.
local news and talk all morning on 1030 The Voice.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and schedule time with Devin and her team.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk, or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk, 1030, The Voice.
Tucson and Southern Arizona, we're back for the last piece of our drive time hour here of Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Really quick, I'm having a case of the Mondays today with my date, so I want to clarify it for the record. The Tucson City Council meeting is tomorrow, Tuesday. Today is Monday, so that's tomorrow, Tuesday. But the Pima County City of Tucson co-meeting is this Friday, June 11th. I said Thursday. It is this Friday at noon, and should be viewable on either their website or also on social media. But it is June 11th, this Friday at 12 p.m. So thank you to the listener who made sure that I clarified that. I've got a couple other things I want to get to if I can, but more importantly, I want to go to our phone lines. Looks like we have Pat on line two. Ray, Pat, thanks for listening and calling in. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Quick question.
Yes.
Prior to the pandemic, one of the excuses used for people not going back to work is the child care issue. Prior to the pandemic, these people were working and evidently, were able to juggle their families. Why is this the excuse that's used now for not being back in the working force? That's my question.
Yeah, Pat, I really appreciate your question. I'll answer it in two ways. My understanding is that when it's been brought up, it's because of school closings. Many schools were closed really up until almost the end of this year. Now, from what we know, this shouldn't be a problem going into the fall. But in the past year and change, it's been school closings where we found out that for better or for worse, and depends on who you talk to, schools are not just places of education, but they are sources of food. They are sources of childcare. They are sources of whatever the case may be. And so not having that as a resource is what's often cited. I will say going forward, Pat, there's new research from a couple of economists that is just coming out that shows that that dealing with childcare is actually not really a meaningful driver of the slow employment recovery, that it's talked about as a reason, but on paper, it really has not been. So, Pat, I appreciate your question. I hope that this issue becomes less of a challenge when individuals are in school. But I will also say that when it comes to the labor market, you know, my wife and I have often had this conversation. A lot of people don't realize how expensive childcare is. It almost got to a point where my wife, who is a very skilled worker in her industry, the conversation started to be, do we give our kid away to somebody else for the day to be able to go work another job and make a little bit more than we would be just paying for childcare? And the result was is that basically if we were to send our child off to childcare at some places, it actually made it so that one of our jobs would be just to pay for childcare. So at that point, we reevaluate our situation. The cost of childcare is incredible. And Pat, I really appreciate your call. Arizonans across the state, when they were asked by a recent Gallup poll to assess challenges to their own economics, to their own issues, to the state as a whole, really start to indicate that childcare and early childhood education is a big deal. Now, in this room behind this mic, we can have that policy debate. We can have that philosophical debate. I'm just telling you what Arizonans are saying is that this is becoming a bigger and bigger issue as more and more people have to be dual income. The cost of childcare is incredibly oppressive. And I think at some point we're going to have to deal with that. Now, again, just to close, that is that saying that folks aren't in the job market because of childcare? I don't think that the research is showing that quite yet. I'm looking at just the data, but I know it is an issue. So, Pat, I appreciate your call. 790-2040. We've got time for a couple more calls if and as they come in. But a really quickly interesting note, the New York Times this morning sent out an email about the new Delta variant of COVID-19, and they're looking at basically the next week as kind of the week where if they're not seeing more hospitalizations and deaths, then they'll be more confident that that we will weather the Delta variant coming out of we're seeing India and Brazil. But what's interesting, the note I wanted to make, is you're starting to see language of, well, if it's not hospitalizing and it's not causing deaths, which this is not showing so far, then it's going to have to be okay. Then it's okay, which is kind of where many have been saying we needed to go with this, that not just the infection rate, but it's the hospitalization and deaths that we really need to be looking at. So many people throughout this pandemic thought that you would be hospitalized at a higher rate than is reality if you got COVID-19. And that has split across political lines. I'm not going to tell you what to think. I'm going to give you things to think about. The reality is that it's a very small percentage of people who get COVID who go to the hospital. Republicans were a lot closer the entire way to what that actual percentage is. Some Democrats, and we're talking citizens who are polled, thought it was 20, 30, 50% that if you got COVID, there was a 30 to 50% chance that you were going to go to the hospital. And that just was never true. It's not the case. And that's just the data. So it's interesting to start to see how, especially in the media, and I'm not anti-media, but the U.S. media was unique in that 80% of its coverage throughout COVID was negative. negative. So you're starting to see a bit of a shift in reporting where there's this realization that we're not going to be able to go back into a shutdown. We're not going to be able to turn the tide back on where we were, that we're going to have to figure out how to live with this thing. And that does not mean total victory tomorrow. And I think that that's just the public health, you know, paired with people and economics realization that we're going to have to figure out how to live with this thing. And there's many people who will go, Zach, you know, welcome aboard. And I'm not saying that that's new information. I'm saying that's a new realization of the realization information that we've had for a while. But you're starting to see that messaged that way. The other thing, Ray, that I thought was cool, and this is going to end on a lighter note, news coming into the week, Jeff Bezos is going to space. He's going to head to space on the flight of the New Shepard, the rocket ship made by his space company, Blue Origin, on July 20th, just 15 days after he's set to resign as the CEO of Amazon. And what's unique about this is he's the first kind of billionaire who's toyed with space to actually go on one of his own craft into space. Elon Musk hasn't done that. He's really the first to put himself on his own vehicle and head to space July 20th. And I guess there's a raffle at this point, $2.8 million or something like that, for somebody else to do it pretty soon. So you and I, Ray, will not be able to go to space on a private spacecraft anytime
soon. Can't afford
it. But as more people do, the price will come down. I mean, eventually, we're going to be able to book a trip to space. It's going to happen.
Yeah, for $1,000.
But that's the thing about this. Jeff formed his company, I think, in 1999, 2000. So it's taken 21 years for him to get on his own thing. It might be a little bit longer for us. But
we'll be old men, Zach.
We will. Well, he's not young either, so there's still hope for us. He's almost 16. He's going to go to space, so maybe we will, Ray. We'll be back, Tucson, on Tuesday, same time, same place. Thanks for hanging with us. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster himself is in studio for the first time in a while today. You don't want to miss it. We'll see you tomorrow. Stay safe, Tucson.